If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Brighten your day with a book.
Hello, my fellow bookworms. This is Philippa from QuickBook Reviews, author interviews and book reviews. How are you doing today? I hope you're okay. My goodness, we've got some books to talk to you about today. Coming up, we've got a book called Five Bad Deeds by Kaz Freer, and Kaz is going to come on and talk to us about that book. We've got four more books from the Women's Prize Fiction long list. At the moment that when I record this, we still haven't had the shortlist announced, so I'm carrying on with those books. So lots to talk about, but first I must tell you, trying to use the library a little bit more, and went into the library to collect a book that had come in. And the lady who was in, I haven't seen her before, but she looked up on the computer and she said, "Oh, you owe money in fines." And I said, I don't owe any money in fines. I return my books when I need to, and thinking people may be listening in the library and think I'm someone who gets into financial trouble with books. And I said, no, I said, I have ordered some books, but I was told I couldn't pay for them until those books have come in and I've been able to pick them up. And she said, "Oh, right, let me have a look." So she pressed a few keys and she said, "You've requested 8 books. She said, 8 books. You've requested 8 books. I've never had anybody come into the library and request 8 books. I was like, "Buckle up, love. I'm on a book buying ban. If you think 8 books is a lot, you are going to need to take some sort of sedative to deal with how this rodeo is going to go later on, because my goodness, 8 books is nothing. I could order 8 books a day. I'll try not to because I've got to read them and you have to pay. I think it's £1.10 per book. But still a lot cheaper. And the authors get a cut, which is lovely. Anyway, waffle, waffle. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was being falsely accused, first of all, of having fines on my account. And secondly, she was in shock that I had requested 8 books. So there we go. That was my experience. But enough about that. Let me talk to you about the books. And the first one, as I mentioned, is Five Bad Deeds by Kaz Freer. We'll get Kaz on. And then after that, I will review the 4 books that I want to talk to you about today. Shall I tell you what those books are now? I will. Here we go. First of all, the book I want to tell you about from the Women's Prize Fiction long list is Night Bloom by Pisa Dzemedi. You must stay and listen to that, because this is a book that I liked an awful lot. Anyway, the next book is Ordinary Human Failings by Megan Nolan. I listened to that on audiobook. And then I read And Then She Fell by Alicia Elliott. And finally, I read Hangman by Maya Binyam. So those are the books we've got coming up. Let's get stuck in straight away to Five Bad Deeds by Kaz Freer. Let me tell you a little bit about this book. Ellen Walsh has done something very bad. If only she knew what it was. Teacher, mother, wife, and all-round good citizen, Ellen is juggling non-stop commitments, raising a teen and 2 toddlers, job hunting, and finally renovating her dream home, the Meadow House. Amidst the chaos, an ominous note arrives in the post. Sooner or later, everyone sits down to a banquet of consequences. Why would someone send this to her? Ellen has no clue. She occasionally tells a white lie, has a sharp tongue now and again, but she's done nothing to incur the wrath of an anonymous enemy, at least not intentionally. Everyone around Ellen, her husband, her daughter, her sister, her best friend, her neighbours, can guess why, though. They all know from bitter experience that good intentions count for very little when you've blown up someone's life. Could the 5 bad deeds that come to haunt Ellen explain why things are going so horribly wrong? Very good. Let's go and talk to Kaz now. It is my huge pleasure to welcome to the podcast today Kaz Freer, whose latest book is 5 Bad Deeds.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you on. We need to talk about this book. Can we start with you giving us a bit of a summary for those who haven't yet read it?
Yeah, sure. So 5 Bad Deeds is essentially about a woman called Ellen Walsh, who at the start of the book, she genuinely sort of believes that she's a decent enough person, in the sense that she'd always be the first to offer you a lift, or she does stuff for charity. She's on the surface, a sort of fairly, what do we call it, all-round good egg and a character. So when she realises fairly quick that someone is trying to dismantle her life in a manner of, to begin with, probably sort of quite passive-aggressive, petty ways, but then as the book goes on, things really sort of ramp up for her. She's absolutely baffled as to who it could be, because she just doesn't really think that she's ever done anything that bad. But that's not necessarily what the people close to her think. And while I said it's mainly from Ellen's perspective, the book does dip in and out the heads of the other characters. And it's normally to sort of to contrast their opinion of a certain scenario with Ellen's opinion of it. And we start to see that, yeah, there it's the book. A lot of it is about self-perception, how maybe we're not, other people don't always see us the way that we see ourselves.
And did that idea just come to you in one moment, or was it sort of elements of the story that built up to be that picture in your mind?
I think the seed of it happened, there was actually like one small incident, but an awful lot grew out of that, when for the first time in my life, and it really was the first time, I complained about something in a restaurant. I'm always that sort of typical Brit, oh no, everything's fine, thank you, or when you go to the hairdressers and you go, oh, yeah, I love it, yeah. Oh God, that's not what I asked for. And I didn't actually go out of my way to complain. I was just walking out and the manager said, was everything okay? And I just had this sort of, I'd had a really bad day. And I just had this moment of, no, actually, everything's not okay. And the reason what the waitress had been really rude, not just sort of slow or incompetent or whatever, she'd been really rude. So I said no and blah, blah, blah. And then later on, I started to feel really bad. And it wasn't, I mean, she was rude, but I started to think, oh my God, what if she just had a bad day? Maybe her husband could have left her this morning. Her family member could be sick. Mm. All these terrible things. She might have kids and now she might get fired because I complained about her. And I just got myself in this like, oh, I really wish I hadn't said anything now. Mm. And it just from there, and it really was the seed, because the book sort of branches out to be quite different to that. But it was the seed of intention, really, that you can think that you're a good person. And you might be a good person, but actually maybe one kind of impulsive comment or just one sort of flippant decision that you make could really upend someone else's life and you wouldn't necessarily know about it. And that's where the idea for 5 Bad Deeds came, because all of the deeds in the book, they do get progressively more serious, but sort of the point of the book is it's the small things that can impact people. So you're not going to find out that one of these deeds was Ellen murdered someone 20 years ago or anything like that. It's quite small offhand bad decisions she's made that have really had quite big consequences on other people. And that's really where it came from. I did go back to the restaurant and she hadn't been fired. So no harm done, but I hope her customer service skills brushed up.
And so have you complained about anything since that moment? Or I know it was the first time you had done it, but have you done anything since then?
No, I haven't. It just doesn't. Yeah, I'm just not that confrontational, really. I mean, I have a bit of a moan to people on the train when the trains are delayed and that sort of thing, but not anything really purposeful. I've gone back to being the typical Brit of, no, it's fine. And it's not to say that I don't think people should complain. I don't this is the thing. I don't think I really did anything wrong in that instance. No. But it did make me stop. I really got into this. We all just have bad. Maybe she's brilliant at her job and we just caught her on a really bad hour because of reasons I don't know. And that, and then she could get fired, and then, and it just sort of started spiraling. But then as a writer, you start spiraling and you go, oh, that's an idea.
Yes, we can use that somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, very good. I mean, it just seemed to me that there are so many books out. I would think, well, how do you get a fresh idea? And yet this seemed very different to me, this concept the book deals with. Did it feel that way to you as you were writing it?
I mean, I suppose I hadn't really. It was one of those moments of, yeah, and I can't really think of any other book that has done a similar thing. And the way it's structured, I suppose, is a little bit different in that the deeds are almost, I don't know, like little mini short stories within the book. And there is, yeah, there is a bit of a pressure, I suppose, to do things a bit differently. And it's hard because if you work, the crime umbrella is huge, but there are only so many stories, I guess. And you'll always find something that you think, oh God, that's a bit like mine and it's coming out 2 months later. But I think a lot of it is more about the voice and the characters. And as long as they feel a little bit fresh, then yeah. I honestly think it's hard to be truly original. There are a few books recently that I can think of that are, but I think it can be quite hard. But as long as you're entertaining, I suppose, then I always remember an agent sort of saying that aspiring writers get really het up about this idea of like being really original when often what readers want is the same but told in a slightly different way. So I think if you can overthink it, but increasingly the hook is becoming a huge thing in crime fiction and probably fiction in general. So you need to sort of know what you're hanging your hat on there. And I think with Five Bad Deeds, it was when I was pitching it to my agent and then when we pitched it to editors, it was almost about that. What it makes it sound a little bit more lofty than it is, but what does it mean to be a good or a bad person? Is anybody all good? Probably not. Is anybody all bad? I would say there probably are a few people in the world that maybe are, but most people are that sort of mix of trying to do the right thing, but making mistakes and being flawed. And Ellen, without a shadow of a doubt, is flawed and not particular. I don't know. She's certainly not written to be overly likable, but I hope she's relatable in some ways in that the decisions she makes aren't completely like, oh, you'd never do that. I think what I really wanted to do is to get the reader to the point where maybe they go, I wouldn't handle it that way, but I can understand why you did. So yeah, I hope it's thought-provoking.
Yes, it is. I can confirm that. But when you get an idea, at what point do you do the is it original check? As an author, are you having to check it all the time to make sure there's not been something very similar published at the same time? Or do you let yourself just go on that writing journey and then you start doing the checks?
I think it's not once I've sort of come up with the idea and talked to my agent about it, and I've worked with the same editor since the beginning of my career, so I will check with her as well. And they would normally sort of pull you up if it's a case of, oh, this feels really familiar. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really think about it once I started writing. But I think it's always the case with every single book. You'll always see an announcement in the bookseller or something where you think, oh God, that sounds a bit similar to mine. And I've had it happen with friends where when they've told me, I think, oh my God, it does sound really similar to yours. But actually, if you read both books, the execution of the idea is completely different. And I think that's all that matters, really.
And that's good. That's freeing to be able to just write what you're passionate about and the idea that's consuming you and not be thinking, oh, I've got to do it like this or I must do it like that. Just write how you want to write. And that's what the reader wants to read as well. I mean, what do you want readers to feel as they're reading Five Bad Deeds?
It's a hard one to answer, really, because you just want the reader, and this is for any book, really, you just want the reader to be entertained and to be intrigued enough that they want to keep turning the pages. But I think to have a strong reaction, I guess, and that doesn't necessarily have to be that they're really rooting for Ellen. It can be that they really want to see her get a comeuppance for various things. But I think to just sort of have some sort of emotional reaction to the book, that's not always... I'm just thinking of books that I've really loved. It probably has been when I have an emotional reaction, because you can read books where you're like, oh, the plot is really good and I've finished it because I want to know how this plot unravels, but you're not really sort of connected or feeling any sort of real love or real hate. Hatred's probably a bit strong, but, you know, for the character, it's just more, I want to see how this plot unravels. Whereas I think the books that I really love, it's more about the characterization and feeling like I'm dealing with a real person, whether I like them or don't like them, they feel real to me. And that I can, I think that's what I said before about being relatable, that even if you like them or you don't like them, you can sort of recognize them, not maybe in yourself, but or in other people that you know. And that's really important to me, just as much as the plot.
Fantastic. Well, it seems like a great place for me to ask you if you would mind reading us a little bit from the book.
No, not at all. Not at all. So yeah, this is a very short prologue, really, and it takes place 3 months after the main action of the book. Okay, so the Meadow House went on sale this week. 12 viewings already, I'm told. Although there's probably more by now. I haven't called home since Tuesday. No phone credit, you see. No deodorant either. Thank God it's canteen day tomorrow. If I use my spends wisely, skipping all my old life essentials that in here we call luxuries, I'll be able to purchase a few more minutes of agonising chit-chat with the people who still speak to me. Mainly Max and Kian, my four-year-old twins. 4 years old. They were three when I last held them. I missed their birthday by 2 weeks. When the dreaded day came, I crooned happy birthday down the phone to them, inhaling the musty scent of hair grease on the receiver and ignoring the code red mayhem kicking off just behind. Code red, a bloodied brawl, otherwise known here as the matinee entertainment. We made the decision early on, we being Adam and almost certainly his parents, not to subject the boys to prison visits. Too traumatic, we decided. Too alien, too counter to the plans we'd made for their curated little lives. I agreed or conceded on the promise that we'd discuss it again once I'd settled in properly. Adam prefers to talk like it's my first term at Rodine. But I've been settled in now for months and he still refuses to sanction it. The women here say he's punishing me because that's what men do, Ellen. But I try to believe he isn't one of those men, that he could never be that cruel. And I know I'm one of the lucky ones. A lot of the women here don't have anyone to keep the home fires burning. No family or real friends to take care of their kids, pay the rent, store their possessions, and in my cellmate's case, feed their budgerigar. In losing their freedom, they lose everything. Although, not all deserve pity. There's a woman three cells down, Joy, could be Joyce, I'm too scared to ask for clarification, who tells anyone who'll listen that she lost her kids over a Dyson hairdryer. It isn't the full story, of course. It never is in this hellhole. She always neglects to mention the 20 prior hairdryers and the 4 previous jail sentences, or the fact she threatened to stab the security guard in the throat when he asked to search her bag. Still, it makes a good sob story, and they're stock in trade in HMP Holbeach. Not that I have one to tell. Our story is pure spite. I suppose it is harsh, though. 15 months for a hairdryer. I mean, no one likes a thief, but at least no one died.
I could just sit here listening to you read the whole book, I think, but that might not be the podcast of choice. And your publishers might not like the whole book to be given away free as an audio version. I'm interested in the character, Ellen, and I know you've talked about her already, but when you were writing, was she very visible to you? Did you base her on somebody, or how she looked, was that a creation entirely of your imagination?
Kind of loosely. It's funny, when I first started writing her and when I discussed the book with my agent, we did start out that she was genuinely going to be this lovely woman, so that when these things started happening to her, it was like, oh my God, who would want to do this to this like impeccable human being? And that's where we started out. But when I started writing, I just realized that I don't think I'm very good at writing. those type of characters. And quite quickly it crept in that she's not a bad person from the start, but you, because I write from the first person, you're inside her head straight away. So while she might be being lovely on the outset, on the inside she's going, oh, for God's sake, this person. Or so you really get to know her from the outset. And even quite quickly into the book, I think it's probably chapter 5 or chapter 6, when you meet a character, a teenage boy called Zane, you suddenly realise that there is an awful lot more going on with this character. So she did change quite quickly. In terms of, she's really loose. I mean, I wouldn't even say based, but just in my head, and I don't know if you watched it. Do you know, did you watch Catastrophe?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Sharon Hawke?
Yeah. Yes. Ah, she's interesting.
So that character, I mean, I quite liked her, but she could be infuriating and she could be quite sharp. And I mean, it's a different thing because Catastrophe was essentially comedy drama. But it's always, I think she gets up every morning with good intentions, but she's just not that naturally good. And so things always, she'll say the wrong thing or she'll say something and not really think through the consequences of it. And I think that was where I was coming from with Ellen. She absolutely does not ever mean to hurt anyone. She's probably a bit thoughtless and a bit impulsive and probably a little bit self-absorbed as well. Mm. And that was, yeah, I seem to be channeling that kind of Sharon Horgan, slightly snippy kind of character, I suppose.
And you mentioned about the discussions you've had with your editor and then also with publishers. When do you have those conversations? Are they just that you've got the idea so you just run it by your agent before you've even put pen to paper?
Yeah, generally with my agent, and then it was a little bit different because it was bought in the States before it was bought in the UK. So I had probably the input from my US editor not right at the beginning, but probably a bit earlier in the process. But then when it sold in the UK, it was brilliant then that I had my UK editor, and she had idea and really great ideas that just add a lot more depth to it then. So I had, yeah, I had three lots of input at different stages. And yeah, my US and my UK editor have been the same since the start of my career as well. So it's good in the sense that they work quite well together. And while they did have slightly different ideas, it wasn't a case of you need to make this massive change or really don't think that character is working. It was just about how we can sort of enrich motivations and that kind of thing.
And we're talking just before publication day, but by the time this episode goes out, it will have been publication day.
Mm.
What's your view? This isn't your first sort of rodeo at publication days.
No.
Is it a fun day or is it a day filled with fear?
The actual day is fun. I think the lead up to it is, yeah, it's always a little bit scary. I've actually this time before with my other books, I've almost down tools for the week before because I've been quite nervous about it and I've been really focused on it. Whereas now I'm doing something slightly different at the moment. I'm writing a TV script and I'm just immersing myself in that. I've got a wedding, I'm going to a wedding on Thursday. And so there's lots of things that are sort of taking me out of the pre-publication neurosis. And it's probably a good thing. I'm sure I'll have my moments, but the actual publication day is lovely. And yeah, it just, sometimes it can feel like a bit of an anticlimax sometimes, but that's not necessarily in a bad way, just in the sense of, and now my book is out and birds aren't dropping out of the air, the world is still turning.
Yeah.
And I think with every single book, I think you do get a bit closer to the point of, the book is written and it's out there now. These people will like it. These people won't like it. These people in the middle will quite like it. There's not really a lot you can do at that stage. Mm. So it doesn't always work, but I just sort of have to try and tell myself that the book is out there and it will produce a response. And I need to start thinking about the next thing now. But it's lovely. It's lovely to do things like this, to get back to talking about it, because I'm sure it's the lead time in publishing can be so long that to sort of the build for publication, I hadn't really thought about the book. Probably for it came out in the States at the end of last year, so I had that lead up, but I hadn't really thought about it that much for 2 or 3 months. So it's quite nice to start putting myself back in Ellen's head again.
And is it called the same in the States? Is it the same?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
And is
the cover different? Because the cover of the UK book has this sort of house on fire.
Yeah, it's the same. The colours were slightly different, but the concept is the same. And yeah, the title's the same. My titles have always been the same, actually, but it's the first time that I called it Five Bad Deeds from the start and wasn't necessarily wedded to that. It just did what it said on the tin. And yeah, both editors were really keen to stick with it. Whereas before, I wrote 3 police procedurals before, and the titles always changed from my working title. The titles never stayed the same. I would have a very loose working title, and each time they got changed, and each time it was absolutely the right decision to change, because mine weren't very good. They were really working titles. I've got to call it something, so it's going to be this.
So if you could go back and whisper something in your ear when you're writing book one, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, God. Whatever you're doing now, do the opposite.
No.
I mean, it sounds quite cheesy, but I think it's just that enjoy all the small wins, because a publishing career is so up and down. And I had quite an odd entry point into publishing, because my first book won the Richard and Judy Search for a Bestseller competition. So I won that in the January, and then the book was on the shelves in July. We were still editing it in March, and then June, and so it all happened so quickly.
Wow.
And everything sort of happened to that book really quickly. And I was just, this is what publishing is like. You write a book and lots of people say lovely things and you get TV options and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't necessarily happen with everybody. And I think that come down with your second book can be quite hard. But again, some lovely things happen with my second book. So it's just sort of don't necessarily expect that anything will ever stay the same, that you sort of have to ride out lots of rejection and disappointment as a writer. And that is, I would say, all but maybe the top 5 authors in the world would probably say the same. There's always rejection of some way, shape or form. So just accept that will happen and enjoy the little wins that you get along the way.
Good advice. We come on to book recommendations. And Kaz, I think you've got 3 book recommendations for us.
Yeah. So my all-time favourite author is Tana French. Have you read any? Yeah. So In the Woods would be my first recommendation, because I think it's her first, and it's also probably my favourite of hers, maybe joined with another. And I mean, it's rare that you get a book that hits every single. You'll get some crime novels that the plot is brilliant, but not that the characterisation isn't, but it's probably the weaker part. Or you'll get books that are extremely character-led, but you think, oh, it's quite slow. And she just seems to nail everything. She writes beautifully. She's got a very dry voice that I really like. And I like the way that she structured her police procedurals. So each book focuses on a different member of the same team, which is an interesting way to do it. So you'll be in the head of one character for the first book, and that character might pop up again in one of the other books, but they're very much in the background and it's someone else taking the lead. And I thought that was really clever. But I mean, she's just wonderful. And In the Woods was the time it was the book that made me want to write. But now when I read it, because I've read it so many times, it's the book that makes me go, why am I even bothering?
The inspiration and the commiseration.
Yeah, exactly. But it is, it's police procedural, but it's a really rich, characterful police procedural. And it's a slow burn, I would say. I think if you like a real kind of short chapter cliffhanger at the end of, possibly she might not be, not for you, but for whoever's readers listening, but I would give it a whirl. She's a phenomenal writer. And then the next book, and it always really sticks out to me because I read so much crime, because I get sent so much of it. I really do try and read outside the genre, but try being the operative word. But I just always remember, do you remember the book? I think it won the Costa Book Award, The Shock of the Fall, Nathan Filer.
Oh, yes, I've not read that.
Oh, so and this is very weird as a writer, I never cry at books. I cry at TV really easily. I cry at everything on the TV. Sick animal adverts, blah, blah, blah. But I never really, I can be moved by them, but I am regularly moved by them, but I've never really cried at a book. And that book killed me. But it's very funny as well. It's about a young guy and really his struggle with mental health problems and how it's all linked to the death of his brother, who had Down syndrome when they were a child, and an accident that happened, and how he sort of wrongly has blamed himself for that accident. And it sounds horrifically bleak, but it's just told with such kind of, it's really moving, but it's got quite a light touch to it. And there's a lot of humour and there's a happy, bittersweet ending. And it was just beautiful. And I look like I've been punched in the face afterwards. I was that proper ugly crying.
Yeah. Yeah. You need a few cucumber slices to recover from that sort of reading experience. Oh, no, that's some emotional response, though. Brilliant. What's your third book that you would recommend?
Yeah. The third book is something that I've read really recently and I've just been sort of telling everyone about it. And it depends if you like these sort of books, but it's nonfiction. And it's a book called 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Burt. And he might still be actually a columnist in The Guardian, but he used to be very much a kind of sort of productivity guru. And he had what he calls like this sort of productivity breakdown where he realized that everything that he'd spent years researching and trying to live up to didn't really work. And he wrote this book, and the 4,000 weeks relates to the average lifespan of a human is 4,000 weeks if you're sort of lucky to get to old age. And you think that the book is going to be again about productivity and about how you get everything into those 4,000 weeks, but the whole ethos behind the book is that you'll never achieve everything that you want to achieve, and you just have to make peace with that. And again, that sounds bleak. The way that he frames it is that it's actually quite freeing, because it then makes you really focus on what is important to you. So he references, I think it's Warren Buffett, who's the great businessman who's written so many business books. And he talks about he gave advice to, I think it was like a whole room full of students, about go away and write down the 15 things that you really want to achieve in your lifetime. And generally, most people will be able to come up with about 15 things that they want to do, and then order them. So get the top five and write those down. And then you sort of think he's going to say, and then take the next five. And actually what he says is just take that top five and then literally black mark through everything else. Screw it up. Bury it in the garden. Burn it. Forget about those other things. Because if you really want to achieve those top five and you want to reach a level of success with them, you have to let go of lots of other things. Mm. And that's the whole thing behind the 4,000 weeks, about realizing that you have a finite amount of time on earth and that you're never going to get everything done. I mean, he talks about how, and I used to be like this, how he always used to be, I will do that really big important thing once I've done these 20 really small, not overly important things, but that are just niggling at me. And he talks about once I've cleared the decks, then I will be ready to tackle the really important thing. And it will be such a peaceful process because the deck's never clear. There's just more stuff coming at you all the time. And so, yeah, it's just about really thinking, the whole thing is about really focusing on what's important to you and what you're prepared to give up to do it, because 4,000 weeks isn't enough time to achieve everything that you think that you want. That makes sense?
Oh, gosh, yes, that's so thought-provoking. It makes you focus on the limited time and, yes, the need to just prioritise. And it ties into what you said earlier as well about just celebrating the small wins and not expecting everything, not expecting to achieve everything and everything be served you on a plate.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. It sounds, even when I was sort of talking about it then, it sounds quite obvious. I don't think we do. I don't think we really focus enough on, God, this is getting quite philosophical, isn't it? But, you know, we aren't here for a long time. And if you don't focus on what you really want, you can just flail about doing lots of things sort of okay-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
But not, yeah. And feeling that you're half failing at everything. Mm. But yeah, gosh, that's a whole other podcast.
Well, I mean, from one deep conversation to another, which is my final question, but, you know, this is as deep as we can possibly get. And it's on the subject of biscuits, Kaz. What biscuit powered the writing of Five Bad Deeds? What was your biscuit of choice?
My biscuit of choice. Do you know, I'm the same with crisps as well. The cheaper and nastier the biscuit, the better. There are certain things in my life that I spend far too much money on, but I just really like own brand coconut rings and own brand custard creams and just those kind of, where you can literally hoover half a packet and you don't feel full. I do like it. You get those really expensive, chunky Boaster cookies that they're only about maybe 6 or 7 in a pack. But I just like sitting with, some kind of Aldi own brand custard creams or Bourbons, or I much prefer Aldi chocolate digestives to the real ones, actually. So that would be.
Oh, there we go.
The chocolate thicker.
Oh, if the chocolate's thicker, then it gets my vote, definitely. It's just wonderful to talk to you and hear more about your brilliant book, Five Bad Deeds. Kaz Freer, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Coming up, 4 book reviews of fiction books on the Women's Prize long list.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Right, so let's get stuck in straight away. Oh, and before I do, actually, let's not get stuck in straight away. Let me just remind you of the books that Kaz recommended to us. And I will put those books in the show notes as well. So Kaz suggested In the Woods by Tana French, The Shock of the Fall by Nathan Filer, 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Burtman. As I say, those will be in the show notes as well, so you don't need to scrabble about and write them down quickly. But let's get on, because I have to tell you about this next book. The next book is Night Bloom by Peace Adzo-Mede. And this is incredible. Now, before I tell you a little bit about this book, what I do want to say is that I hadn't read the blurb. I didn't know anything about it. And that actually added more to it. So if you want to sort of go through what I went through, fast forward the next few seconds while I explain a bit more about the book. I'm not giving any spoilers, but literally I went in with no preconceptions of what the book involved. And I could see that were a couple of narrators on the audiobook, because I listened to the audiobook. But I enjoyed the experience even more because of that. But if you're okay to hear a bit about what the book is about, then listen on. Growing up in the same small Ghanaian town, Selassie and Akofa were more than just cousins. They were best friends. The girls shared everything, their dreams, their desires, their every secret. But as they enter their teens, Selassie begins to change, until Akofa barely recognises the sullen, withdrawn girl she once knew so well. Years go by before they cross paths again, and their lives look very different now. Although they are separated by continents, they've each found success in their careers. Akofa works in international development in the US. Selassie is a restaurateur running the hottest spot in Accra. It takes a crisis to pull them back together, forcing both women to confront shocking secrets and childhood trauma that neither one has been willing to address. Now they must bridge the gulf between them to stop history repeating itself. What can I tell you about this book? I can tell you that it was amazing. Listening to it, the narrator's voice was beautiful and added so much to it. And as I say, it said on it that there were three narrators, and you get quite far into the book. And I was thinking, well, I've not heard another narrator. What's this got to do with it? And then, again, I'm not going to give any spoilers. The other narrator comes on. And I just thought, oh my goodness, I'm here for this. And as the other narrator spoke, I really was there for that other narrator as well. Wow. I loved it. I love listening to it. I wanted to hear it all the time. I walked further. When I was listening to this book, I just loved it so much. And it is the first time in my life that I've announced to my family that I was going to go for a second run that day, just because I wanted to listen to the rest of it, hear the end. I just had to. I couldn't sit by and not know how the story ended. It's an amazing book. It's, I think, going to be one of my top two, possibly. Who knows? I haven't finished reading them all yet, but that's what I'm thinking. It's, yeah, really enjoyed it. So Night Bloom by Pisad Zomedi. Amazing. And I need to go and read her other book as well. The next one is called Ordinary Human Failings by Megan Nolan. So let me tell you a little bit about the book Ordinary Human Failings. It's 1990 in London, and after the death of a young girl on an estate, the finger of suspicion is pointing at one reclusive Irish family, the Greens. At their heart sits Carmel, beautiful, otherworldly, and once destined for a future beyond her circumstances, until life and love got in her way. Now, as the scandal unfolds and the tabloids hunt their monster, she must confront the secrets and silences that have trapped her family for so many generations. Good book. And as I'm reading that, I'm thinking I really did let myself down by just going straight into the next book. I think I'm so determined to read these 16 books as quickly as possible. And I listened to this as an audiobook as well. I thought the narrator was extraordinary. Some of the performances that she delivers is really good. It's an interesting book. There's a murder to solve, but it's not your typical crime book. There's a lot more involved in it. I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was good, but it didn't have the power that Night Bloom had. And I listened to Ordinary Human Failings straight after listening to Night Bloom. So in a way, I should have had one of those palate cleansers before going on to another book on the list. But there we go. I'm not allowing myself to read books in between them, apart from the books that obviously I'm interviewing authors about. So, yeah, it is good. It's just a Night Bloom just blew my mind. Anyway, on to the next book, which is And Then She Fell by Alicia Elliott. Let me tell you a little bit about this one. On the surface, Alice is exactly where she should be in life. She's just given birth to a beautiful baby girl. Her ever-charming husband, an academic whose area of study is conveniently her own Mohawk culture, is nothing but supportive, and they've moved into a home in a wealthy neighbourhood. but strange things have started happening. Alice finds herself hearing voices she can't explain and speaking with things that should not be talking back to her, all while her neighbour's passive aggression begins to morph into something far more threatening. Now, this book, I read the first chapter, and at the beginning of the first chapter, I was like, oh, okay, this is fine. And then by the end of the first chapter, I just thought, holy moly, this is such an incredible book. Captivated me, drew me in. I was sold. I went to bed that night thinking, tomorrow when I get time to read this book, I'm going to be one happy person. And it was actually that first chapter had an element of horror in, which I don't normally read, but I was totally here for it. Unfortunately, the book then didn't hold my attention as much after that. I thought it was different and fascinating and powerful. I just wanted, can we believe Philip is saying this? I wanted more of the horror. I wanted more of that. But anyway, there we go. And finally, Hangman by Maya Binyon. Let me tell you a bit about this book. A man returns home to sub-Saharan Africa after 26 years living in exile in America. When he arrives, he finds that he doesn't recognise the country or anyone in it. Thankfully, someone at the airport knows him, a man who calls him brother. As they travel to this man's house, the purpose of his visit comes into focus. He is here to find his real brother, who is dying. Okay, so this book, I liked it in some ways because it's endearing, funny, sad, very different. It took me a few goes to get stuck into it, the way it's sort of narrated. It's not bad. It's not one I would probably put on the long list, but it was different to read it, that's for sure. But again, sorry, out of the four this week, Bloom is the one I'm clinging to. But there we go. Those are your books. I've talked to you long enough today. It's been a very long episode. So sorry about that. Thanks for bearing with me. And just look after yourselves. Please look after yourselves. And I'll talk to you very soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Quick Book Reviews podcast. That's enough books, said no one, ever. See you again soon.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.